Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh in hour number two. And as I said in the previous hour, we're joined by New York Post Jets beat reporter. He also reports for WFAN locally here in New York on 101.9 FM, 660 AM. It's Brian Costello. Brian, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So obviously the Jets are in a really unique position. As my co-host Kevin Walsh was saying before, they're a real key to this draft and how it falls. But I guess I'll ask you first to kick it off with all the rumors that have swirled. What is the one thing that you can tell us with certainty, whether it's who they're taking at three or what they have to address later in the draft? What is the one thing that you feel like you know at this point?
They're taking a quarterback at number three. That's about all I know. And which quarterback, I'm not sure. You know, obviously there's been a lot said. I've heard a lot of different things. You know, I know they do like Baker Mayfield a lot. But then there's other people in the organization I've heard like Josh Rosen a lot. I've kind of been operating under the assumption basically from mid-March on that Sam Darnold was going to go number one, and if he didn't go number one, he's going to go number two. Now, recently, Josh Allen's gotten a lot of steam with the Browns, and the Giants look like they'll take Saquon Barkley. So if Darnold is there at three, I think that changes things too. So there's a lot of possibility there at three, a lot of uncertainty, but it's going to be a quarterback for sure.
So, Brian, let me ask you then, if we can kind of go back to the beginning, right? Because they were originally at six, and they made the big move to get up to three. Do you feel like, in terms of evaluating that move, it's a scenario where if they get the pick right, it's worth it. If they get it wrong, they blew it. Or can we, as it currently stands, appropriately assess the value that they got on the deal?
I think they had to do it. You know, I know if you look at trade charts and things, it might say they overpaid it to three, but they have to get a quarterback in this draft. They've been kind of building to this moment for the last 2 years, you know, when they cleaned out all the roster last year of all the older guys, expensive guys, and, you know, there was talk of tanking and all that stuff. It was all with the eyes on this Thursday. You know, that was when everybody was pointing to is, okay, this is when the Jets are going to get their quarterback. Then they went out and won five games last year and kind of complicated matters because instead of getting the number one or number two pick like we all thought they would, they had the number six pick. And then if you started looking at it, you're like, okay, well, there's four quarterbacks that everyone has rated highly in this draft, right? They could be all gone by the time you get to number six, especially with the Bills. You know, the precursor to the Jets trade was the Bills trade. The Bills moving up to 12 there, yeah. I think, kind of sparked this because then the Jets go, okay, well, now they can go from 12 to maybe like they can get to eight range or something like that. Then they can get up to three because the Colts were sitting there at three. They were the prime spot to trade out of because the Colts didn't need a quarterback. So I think the Jets were just trying to beat the Bills or somebody else to that number three pick. And that's why the trade went down as early as it did. I think it was a smart move. You know, yeah, now they have to get the pick right. But all in all, I thought it was a smart move. They couldn't have just stayed sitting there at six and then watch all these quarterbacks come off the board. And if you look at recent history, teams that have drafted quarterbacks have traded up. You know, look at last year. Trubisky was a trade up. Watson was a trade up. Mahomes was a trade up. A couple years ago, Goff was a trade up. Wentz was a trade up, right? Like, you don't just sit and wait for a quarterback to fall to you anymore. You kind of have to go up and get these guys at the top of the draft. So the move made a lot of sense to me. And I thought the bonus was that they didn't give up their first-round pick next year.
All right, so we're with Brian Costello. You can find him on Twitter at Brian Coz. That's C-O-Z. He's a Jets beat reporter for the New York Post and WFAN locally in New York. So if I were being critical of the move, and I'm not really, but if I were to be, you could say that they haven't guaranteed themselves whomever it is, whether it's Allen or Mayfield, because to your point about the Bills, they still have a couple of picks in their back pocket. They could make some maneuvers to take the Giants pick. Whether or not that happens is to be determined.
Right.
But, you know, the Jets could be in a scenario where maybe their number one guy gets selected at two. Correct?
Correct. But I think they have three guys rated very closely here. They wouldn't have made this move if they did. You know, I think obviously they must have one rated above the others, but I think they have three guys kind of bunched together. You know, my guess right now is that it's Darnold, Mayfield, and Rosen are the three guys. That Josh Allen is the guy that they don't really like a lot, but I could be wrong on that. But you have these three guys together, they're going to end up with one of the three of them. I think that was the point of the trade, is they felt comfortable with any of these three guys, and they were willing to move up. And I think they don't believe the Giants are going to trade down. They didn't even call the Giants when they were trying to make this move. And part of the reason they did is they felt that Dave Gettleman does not trade down. He's never traded down in his time with the Panthers, not once. You know, so they don't think Gettleman will trade that pick. So to me, in their minds, they were thinking, you know, if the Giants could take a quarterback too there. So they might end up. But I think in their minds, they believe there's going to be one quarterback taken in the first two picks. And the other pick will be, you know, the best player available.
You know, that is interesting, because I was curious if at any point they were thinking about looking to the Giants, but if they had the feeling that they weren't going to move, it makes sense. Plus, the New York trade could be difficult. Brian, I am curious for you. I mean, it is tough to kind of work your way through there. I don't think there's any consensus on this quarterback group, or just from your perspective, whether it be based on the talent that you've seen, the personality, fit, whatever it may be. Who is the quarterback that you think, if all of the four were to still be available there at three, would be the best fit for this Jets team at three?
I like Darnold a lot. I think he kind of checks all the boxes. You know, I know he had a lot of turnovers last year, but I think there was factors there that played into that that probably could be coached out of him. And if he had the right supporting cast, it would help. You know, I don't think he's ready to play right away, but I think he has the highest ceiling of all these guys. And, you know, Amy, I think he has a personality to deal with New York. I spent a little bit of time with him last summer. I actually went out there in August when we were all talking about the Jets having the number one pick to do a story on Darnold, because he was kind of the suck for Sam, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed with him. You know, I thought I came away very impressed. I talked to all these guys at the combine. And, you know, to me, he just has the right demeanor for New York. I don't think he'd be that phased. Playing at USC is basically like playing for a professional team. You know, I think those guys are kind of ready for what comes with the media market and that type of stuff. You know, USC is a high profile program. So to me, he's probably the best of the four as far as a fit for the Jets, in my view.
So you think if this Josh Allen to the Browns thing, the rumor that's picked up steam happens, then that's a win for the Jets.
Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, I'd be curious if the Giants then stick with, you know, not taking a quarterback, which is kind of what we've been hearing for a month about them. You know, but was that with the idea that Darnold was going to be gone? I was at Darnold's pro day, and walking away from that pro day, everyone thought, okay, he's going number one to Cleveland, because Jimmy Haslam was sitting up at the stands with his parents. You know, he had a good day throwing in the rain. I think the teams were under the assumption that, okay, he's going number one, let's move on. Now, if he's thrown into the mix, it makes things interesting, and that the Giant Jet thing with Sam Darnold is going to be fascinating, because if the Giants pass on Sam Darnold and then he goes to the Jets, he becomes this great franchise quarterback that could haunt the Giants for years. You
completely.
Know?
So it's probably why they didn't want to trade, right? That's probably why they didn't want to trade with them, correct?
I think the Giants would have traded with the Jets. You know, the Jets just, they never call. The Jets did not think the Giants would trade. Now, could I see a scenario on draft night where Gettleman's sitting there at number two and he calls the Jets up and says, hey, you know, you can come up to number two. Like, if the Giants figure they're going to take Barkley and they can get him at three, you know, if they trade with the Jets, like sort of what like San Francisco did last year with Chicago, Gettleman could, you know, bluff them and say, I've got a lot of offers for number two. I might give them away. The Jets could, you know, throw them a fourth round pick, a fifth round pick, whatever it is to move up. I can see that happening on draft night, but, you know, in terms of, you know, a month ago, I think the Jets just kind of thought, A, that the Giants wouldn't be inclined to trade, and B, it would cost them a premium. It would probably cost them a first-round pick next year where they could just move up with the Colts and not have to deal that first-round pick next year.
To be fair, though, right, with Mayfield taking a shirt off for a magazine cover, it probably locks him in as the Jets quarterback of the future. I mean, do you think he's going to end up being a fit there for them, just personality-wise? Because that's kind of, I think, one of the things that has that connection being made so much is him going to the Jets and being in New York and thriving in that spotlight, for better or worse.
I know who the beat writers are rooting for. Let's just put it that way.
That's a story a day a for you, Kaz.
Yeah, he'd be a lot of fun. He, you know, and you know, I don't think the Jets. I think the Jets view his personality as a good thing. I think you know, they liked last year. They kind of said we want to go out and get alpha dogs. We need some alpha dogs, and they felt like they got one on defense in Jamal Adams last year. Agreed. Now, in my mind, that doesn't really translate on offense. I think those guys are great on defense. The cocky, you know, swagger guys are to be able to play defense. You kind of need that on offense. It's a little different, especially at the quarterback position. But from what I've heard, the Jets are not turned off by his personality. They liked him. They liked him in the meetings. They think, you know, he could bring something to that locker room that they need. I'll be curious to see how it plays out if that does happen, because I've never heard a quarterback kind of talk like he talks. Other positions, sure. Wide receivers, sure. But a quarterback kind of as brash as him, it's going to be interesting if he ends up in New York.
Yeah, this is Brian Costello. You can find him on Twitter at Brian Koz. Again, Jets beat reporter for the New York Post and WFAN. So regardless of who it is, do you think – I'll ask a two-part question. Do you think there's a path for that guy to start in week one? And B, do you think that the staff they have in place is one that can properly develop a QB?
The first question, you know, I think there's always a path. You know, I don't think that's what the Jets will want. Obviously, they brought back Josh McCown. They signed Teddy Bridgewater. They kind of view this as they're going to have three paths here to go down. And to me, you know, they're going to be – their hope is that they'll have one of the veterans playing week one. But that being said, you know, you look at examples like Russell Wilson in Seattle, like Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, those guys weren't supposed to play. And they just played so well in the spring and summer that they earned the job. And sure, if one of these guys comes in and lights out in these practices, Jets aren't going to force them to sit just to force them. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll play them. The second part is hard for me to answer. I don't really know. You know, Jeremy Bates – this is going to be his first year as offensive coordinator, his second year with the team. You know, he is praised by guys. I thought he did some good work last year with Josh McCown. He got a good season out of him. He's very highly respected in the building. The reason they made the change from John Morton to Jeremy Bates is partly because they thought so highly of Bates. You know, they thought he could do this. And he's gotten praise for a lot of years as a quarterback coach. So, we'll see. They think he can. I'm not 100% sure whether they can develop a quarterback or not. I haven't seen them do it yet. You know, I mean, Christian Hackenberg didn't develop. Now, developing a quarterback is a tricky thing. Can you develop a guy who can't play? You know, like how much? I'm not quite sure how much development these teams actually do, or if these guys come in and they're kind of ready to play and they just kind of get polished by the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator. So, yeah, I'm not sure if they can, and we'll find out, though.
Do you think, though, because I tend to agree with you in the idea that they're probably not that they're ideal, like they don't want to, if the guy's good enough, he'll start. But in an ideal world, maybe they give him a year to kind of just get acclimated and learn things. They don't have to learn on the fly, if you will. Right. Is that going to then make it a little difficult to really judge the Jets season? Obviously, we're way away from when you would have to, you know, put a grade on how the Jets would perform next year. But I do feel like everything is going to be so tied up into the quarterback that they select. And if he doesn't see the field in 16 games, which is fairly possible because he's odds are going to be the third QB on the depth chart, and they don't have a ton of other picks within this draft because of the move that they made to where you're going to be evaluating a ton of other talent. Sure, there, right. You know, Leonard Williams is coming back, Jamal Adams is going to be growing, Marcus May, but could it kind of make it difficult to really judge whether this upcoming season could even be successful or a failure if that guy doesn't see the field?
Well, I don't necessarily know if he'll be the third quarterback. I think one of the two veterans will be gone by week one, okay. To be honest. I think, you know, I think if if Teddy Bridgewater's knee is not good enough where he can't practice all spring and get in himself in the summer, the Jets will either look at, you know, maybe they could trade him. You know, if there's a, you know, there's always injuries in training camp, the quarterback teams are looking. They remember, they only guaranteed him $500,000 right now. I think it'll be $1 million by the season. So they could easily, you know, cut him if they don't like him, or they could try to trade him. And, you know, if Teddy Bridgewater comes in and they're like, wow, this guy's playing great, they could look to move Josh McCown. He could be the guy that the, you know, a team looks to add if they're so I think it's gonna, he's gonna, whoever the rookie is will be the backup quarterback. If he doesn't play at all this year, that means the Jets have had a great season. Okay. So you won't have to worry about the evaluation, right? I think that means they're in the playoffs or 10-6, something like that, and you won't have to worry about it. He will play by the end of the season if they're not playing well, in my opinion. I think, you know, if they're struggling in mid-November, they make the switch to the rookie at some point. I don't think they want to play him right away, but to me, they will play him if the season isn't going well, if the quarterback isn't playing well. And then you might get a bump out of that if you're the coaching staff. Like, let's say that guy looks pretty good down the stretch, you know, a la Jimmy Garoppolo, something like that, where he comes in and plays really well. Then all of a sudden, things are looking up for 2019. Even if the record isn't great, 2018, the arrow's pointing up, and you know there'll be some excitement around the team.
Great stuff. So Leonard Williams picked up his 50-year option. Yeah. No surprise there. So real quick, one outside of QB at 3, what else do they know they have to address in this draft?
Say pretty much everything except safety they have to address. You know, you can make a case for everything, but to me, you know, the big ones are they need a pass rusher desperately, which is hard to get outside of the first top 10 picks. You know, usually that's hard to find, but they need one of those. And I think they need to address the offensive line. They really don't have many long-term answers on that offensive line. So that those would be the two spots I'd really be looking at in this draft later rounds.
Now, the good news is there's tackles to be had probably early, you know, in the mid rounds of this draft. So hopefully it'll be able to address that there. Brian, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. That's Brian Costello at Brian Cos on Twitter, Jets beat reporter for the Post and WFAN. Brian, we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We'll come back. We'll ruminate on all that Jets talk. We'll talk about more issues related to the draft. It's Mike and Kevin on FST. We're back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network after this.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
We're back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Lute, Kevin Walsh. We just had Brian Costello on. He was awesome. He gave us everything we needed to know about the Jets.
I kind of forgot that they could cut that one of those quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of info he's reminds you of. I never really saw much of a path for Teddy Bridgewater here, but obviously if he was healthy enough and outplayed Josh McCown, so be it.
Yeah.
But Josh played well last year.
He did, honestly.
Brian's right. Jeremy Bates got a good season out of Josh McCown last year. The Jets were better offensively than everybody expected. I know they ended up 5-11, but people literally thought the Jets might not win a game.
I thought they were going to be a historically bad offense.
So did I. And Robbie Anderson was really good, and Josh McCown was good. And they did a nice job. They lost a ton of games just because. But remember that first half of the season, the Jets were competitive in every game. So,
oh yeah, they almost beat the Pats.
In any event, I know that was actually the turning point. That's when things started to slide. You know, they almost got their fifth win, like in the first half of the season, basically, and it started to go downhill after that. Anyway, Brian gave us a lot of good info. I think what remains is that you still don't know what's going to happen at 2. He doesn't think, and he's probably right, that Dave Gettleman has never traded back. But I'd have to go back and see, when has Dave Gettleman ever picked at 2?
I mean, he picked at 8 last year, right?
there's a lot of value to be had at
That's
two, especially when the Bills need that pick. The Bills need that pick. They need it.
So can I say, I do think that there is something, because you saw the whole John Elway, the fifth pick. We are willing to trade the fifth pick. You saw that, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the silliest things I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, obviously you're willing to trade the fifth pick. You have no idea who would be there on the board at five. And if somebody offered you an incredible package, why would you not be willing to trade the fifth pick? So I feel like, right, everything has to have some type of reason to it. It's not like John Elway thought he was breaking some news. And I wonder if that was just kind of like a wink, wink. Hey, Buffalo, we're here. Because if you think about how this board could go, right, it's very plausible that we see, say, Darnold, Barkley, Mayfield, Chubb. 1, 2, 3, 4, no trades. Now, I'm not saying that's exactly what's going to happen. But if it does, then all of a sudden, the Broncos could be in a prime spot, and then the Bills probably have to give up a lot less capital to get to five as opposed to two.
But I think the picks 2, 4, and 5 are fluid, and 6, for the record, because the Colts need everything.
Right.
Except QB, and one would argue that they could probably use a backup in case... Where's Jacoby Brissett now? Is he still there?
I think so. Let's check. I'll check.
Yeah, check that. So I think he is. But in any event, 2, 4, 5, and 6 are fluid. Those picks could get moved. So I shouldn't say – I say the Bills need that pick. It's if they want Mayfield or Allen.
Yeah, he's still in Indianapolis.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If the Bills want Mayfield or Allen, they need to get up there. If they feel like they can hang out and take Josh Rosen or hang out and take Lamar Jackson, so be it. But, you know, we know Darnold. Yeah, I think we know Darnold Allen, Mayfield. Two of those are gone by the first three picks, right? And you're saying it could be all three, right? Conceivably. But the Bills have been pretty good about not letting on who they want. But I think they're going to be moving up. I'm sure they've called the Giants and Gettleman either. Well, let's go to you had a bunch of rumors that you wanted to talk about. So one of them is that the Giants and the Bills have a trade in place already.
Yeah.
Now, I've been shooting my mouth off for like 2 months that the Giants should trade that pick and get a lot of value for it. Now, it would eliminate them from getting their, getting Barkley, A, or B, the second, the quarterback in the draft that they like the most, which I've heard is Darnold, and he's probably going one. So, you know, where does that put the Giants? So that's the conundrum. Yeah. If you evaluate all these quarterbacks, but you really like Darnold, and you don't feel like either of the other guys is worthy of being the number two pick, then shouldn't you just garner as much value as you can, get a couple of first round picks? I don't know. That's why he's going to get paid the big bucks to make that kind of decision. But I don't think it's inconceivable that the Giants could move out and get a couple of those picks. I've been saying they should do that. I think they really want the guard. They'll feel some sort of pressure to not pick a guard at two. I personally don't think it matters that much. Yes, it's not historically a position that you pick up there. But if you're going to take him at five, why didn't you take him at two? Because once the draft is over, if Quentin Nelson ended up becoming a Pro Bowler, would you care that you picked him at two?
No, I mean, honestly, though, this is kind of the thing, and we've both been talking about this, and I feel as strongly, if not as stronger than you, in terms of the Giants taking anything at two other than a quarterback to me is a massive mistake, because the assets that are going to be coming in from a trade with the Buffalo Bills, or even if it were the Miami Dolphins, who are, you know, I think there's a lot of reports that they're looking quarterback, whomever it may be, is far more valuable than, I would listen to an argument on Quentin Nelson because I think he is that good, and I do think that you're seeing how the offensive line is changing in terms where it's not just tackles that are valuable, right? The big guard money is now starting to become a thing. There to me is not a single case to be made for Saquon Barkley to be the number two overall pick in this draft specifically. Leonard Fournette at 4 was fine, especially because of just kind of the way the team was situated and things like that, but there also was not what was considered to be one of the best quarterback classes we've seen in decades. The The running back.
But that's my counter. That's my counter. That's why I don't know if it's as massive a mistake as you are suggesting it would be, because there's a plethora of quarterbacks. We've at least seen the pendulum swings somewhat towards the middle, that it's not necessarily a historic quarterback class. There's just a bunch of decent options right now. A bunch of these guys might wash out, if not all of them. So that's why I think you don't have to take the QB.
I don't think they have to take the quarterback. I think that
the Cardinals have to draft, like the Cardinals and the Bills have to draft somebody. They can't go into the 2018 season being like, hey, we have AJ McCarron, we're good to go. Or hey, we have Bradford and Glennon, we're good to go. They have to have somebody long term. The Giants have Eli and Davis Webb, and I know that in 2019 Eli's not going to be under center, but I am suggesting that it could be a later round pick here or a 2019 draft pick. That's all I'm saying. The other two teams that I mentioned have to have somebody now.
Well, I know, so I'm not saying that they need to take quarterback. I'm saying that they need to either take a quarterback or move. Like that, I just, there to me is no way that just from a value perspective, you could justify Saquon Barkley at number two overall, considering what is going to be on the plate from the Buffalo Bills. And again, I mean, I understand what Brian said in terms of the Jets and the Giants never even made a phone call. But part of that is because what they think the mindset of Gettleman is. I mean, there's no argument to be made that the package that the Colts received for the number three overall pick is not more valuable than what Saquon Barkley is going to bring to the table, just considering the running back position. Whether it be Darius Geis, Sony Michel, there's no guarantee that either of those two guys even make it into the first round the way the running back group is looked at. And there are guys that are continued to be talked up, whether it be Royce Freeman, Ronald Jones, Nick Chubb, Rashad Penny, whoever it may be. We see that the running back position continues to be a spot where you can get guys later in rounds. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't guys that bust. The Eagles took Donald Pumphrey. He's horrible. They're never going to play him. They came out and openly admitted they missed on a lot of talented guys. But when you look at the dominant teams in the National Football League, there's not a ton of them that spent high draft capital on running backs. And those who did were in a perfect spot to do it. The Cowboys did it, and they had the best offensive line in football. Saquon Barkley is going to be running into defender after defender, and it's not going to turn out good for them.
That's why I don't think the Giants should take him there. I don't. But unless they... I mean, they have Nate Solder there now. I think the Giants are going to have to pound offensive line in this draft, even if it's not at two. And I think they will. I think he knows that. And Dave Gettleman is on the record many times. He uses the term hog mollies for the offensive and defensive linemen that he covets. So he is going to hammer those lines up front, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Even if he doesn't do it with Quentin Nelson in the first round. So that was the one rumor. Giants and Bills have a trade in place already. Of all the rumors you gave me, I think that is the one that is plausible. You saw another one was the Giants are taking Barkley at two. I think it's possible.
Can I say
I think it's possible, but I don't think they'll do it because that is very un-Giants like, and Dave Gettleman has been in that building for a long time.
The one thing about that rumor, right, is kind of you. Right, we have to decipher whether these things are smoke screens or not, right? So if something's a smoke screen, that means that it would then benefit. What is the benefit to the Giants being this heavily linked to Barkley? Like, there really isn't any.
So somebody will trade with them.
Because I don't see it. So if you can break it down to me, because I don't see how there to me, there's no situation where a team is then trying to jump ahead. Right, there's no plausible to jump ahead of the Giants. The Browns aren't moving back like that. And I don't see a scenario.
It just takes one team, Kev. It just takes one team to do it. And it could be the Broncos doing it because they release C.J. Anderson. Or it could be somebody else that feels like they're close. And like, you know what? This guy is a transcendent talent. He graded higher than Todd Gurley and graded higher than Leonard Fournette and graded higher than et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he's got a great attitude and we like him and he's a piece for us that we could use. It just takes one team and it's okay to say it.
No,
it just takes one team.
I get that part of it, but I don't see. So if all the reports are 100% the Giants are taking Saquon Barkley, then any team that's interested in Saquon, there really wouldn't be much of a point in calling. And any team that's saying that they need quarterback, well, they're now saying, well, we don't have to get to two because that they're going to just take Saquon Barkley, and it could make things a bit easier for us. So it's one of those rumors where it's so odd to me, and I totally understand your point that it takes one team. But, I mean, maybe this thing is as locked in as people are saying, that they're really going to add Saquon Barkley. I would
really...
Well,
your point is that it works for and against them at the same time, because for the teams that would call about a running back, it may scare off the teams that are waiting on a QB, and they'll just trade with the Browns or the Broncos or the Colts to get right. to the QB, because, yeah, I get that. So that's actually why I don't think that one's as plausible as the Giants-Bills have a trade in place. The next one, we'll get through it because we've got a bunch more to do.
Yeah.
Patriots are heavily interested in Josh Rosen. Whatever. That one is like somebody saying, you know what, Bill's going to take control of this thing and stick it to Brady because he's got player control and just blow up the whole relationship. That's what that would be.
The one,
if he took Josh Rosen, first of all, they won't trade up to do it, and they would have to because he's not going to last till 23. So that would be him blowing up the Brady relationship, which I think, based on stuff that we've heard both from Seth Wickersham months ago and more recently about them having a kumbaya meeting with Bob Kraft, and apparently it really wasn't left on perfect terms. It's okay, you know, family struggles and all that kind of stuff. You got to talk through it, but that would be blowing up the relationship because they'd be saying to Bob Kraft, I don't really care what you think about Tom Brady playing until he's 47. I'm not doing it, and I don't care what you tell me. And that would be saying to Brady, you're 41.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got about a year left. I'll give you that. And then we're moving on to the young guy because I gave up Jimmy when I didn't want to, and I'm going to go with a guy that I like. I don't think that one's plausible because it would be awesome if it happened.
It'd be horrible. They'd run the NFL again for Why? Another 15 years. It would be the worst thing that ever happened.
No, because Belichick would be gone. It would actually be the one thing. It would be the one thing that Kraft could fire him for.
Well, but then he would never let him actually make that move. Well, so the one thing is that if any of these quarterbacks are going to fall, apparently it's going to be Rosen. Like, if he makes it past five, there could be a bit of a slip. And the one team that people are kind of linking in terms of a potential trade partner are the 49ers at 9. Now, to me, the thing about this that I feel is kind of why it's not really going to happen is I don't know if there's really a path for them to be able to get in a spot to take Rosen. Like, if he's there at 9, why would the Cardinals or the Dolphins or the whomever it may be not be offering more than the Pats to make sure that they get there? Unless the Niners feel like they owe the Pats for Jimmy G. My thing, though, is... Regardless of the
Patriots need defensive help anyway.
They need they absolutely need help in other spots. Like we kind of talked about this in previous shows. They haven't had a banner offseason, but they do need a future quarterback at some point. Now, yes, they can just take that with the pick that they got from the Niners in that second round pick. I'm not saying that they need to trade up for Josh Rosen, but if they like this guy, which it makes tons of sense because I think that Josh Rosen is an incredibly talented prospect, and they see a path to go up and get him, I don't know if they're necessarily going to just say no, because the thing, I don't know how stable this Brady-Belichick thing is anyway, so if I don't know if Belichick's really going to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to let him scare me off taking a quarterback that I think I can dominate for the next decade with. That doesn't even seem to make any sense. If I was Kraft, I'd be like, listen, get the guy that you think you can dominate for the next decade with.
Yeah, but that relationship is...
It's bad now.
The relationship, I'm saying the relationship between Kraft and Brady is about as rock solid as any owner-player relationship in all of sports. And he is a quarterback. I don't care how old he is. He threw for 4,500 yards, 32 touchdowns, and 8 picks at a 66% completion rate. So the play is not suffering. It isn't like he threw up Eli's numbers or has been talking about retirement like Ben has, or, you know, Phil Rivers just skates by and all this kind of stuff. But whatever. I don't get into it. I'm going to bash Phil Rivers because I like him. He's the quarterback of my dynasty team, and I've won like 2 titles with him. So anyway, So that rumor, the Browns could take Josh Allen. I'm not buying it. But
that's the one that feels smokescreeny to me. That's the one that's the one that feels very smokescreen. They're trying to bait someone into something.
But they don't need to do any smokescreens. They should be in a conference room with Sam Darnold right now. That's it.
I don't disagree. They have
screw you guys. Screw all the rumors. Unless
they've been open though that they would trade one. Like they're not going to, right? But they it's not. I feel like they've done that to just kind of encourage as many phone calls as possible.
The funny thing is, if it was the opposite way, like if they're they could say that they are most interested in Darnold, field a couple of phone calls, maybe from the G-men, maybe from a couple of other teams, because I feel like he's more coveted, where they could move back a few picks and take Allen. Like, if the Browns didn't take a QB at one, they could still get Josh Allen at four.
Oh, yeah.
Entirely possible. So, just saying. Jets are locked into Baker Mayfield. I think we covered that with Brian Costello. It seems likely, but they're not locked in. They really like Darnold, too, I think, based on our discussion with him. That seems obvious. Come back, talk more football. It's Mikey Kevin on FST. We'll be back.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back on FST, Mike Blewett, Kevin Walsh. Hopefully you listened to that Brian Costello interview earlier in the hour. We'll have it up on social media by the end of the show. And we're going to keep talking football right here. And I want to let you know that Fantasy Factor is the perfect daily fantasy site for the casual recreational player. There's flatter prize pools, smaller fields, and single-entry contests only. Fantasy Factor always has fun contests going on, and this year Fantasy Factor is running a $100,000 home run derby. So simply sign up and enter www.fantasyfactor.com. Hopefully you're hitting us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin's at the Kevin Walsh. So I was reading an article earlier this week. It's on Yahoo, written by Charles Robinson, and it was about the discontent, to put it in his term, that Aaron Rodgers has felt. By the way, Aaron Rodgers bought a piece of the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday, so that's tangential to this story, but he did. He's a minority owner in the Bucks now.
Got in before the Giannis stock goes too high.
Yeah, no kidding. And we'll talk about Giannis in about 20 minutes or so and the Bucks. But there's some discontent in Packers land because Rodgers felt like he is both frustrated, quote, and emotional, quote, over a lack of communication from the front office prior to some significant decisions this offseason. Obviously, Jordy Nelson was let go. He's now a Raider. They distanced themselves from quarterbacks coach Alex Van Pelt, so he's out. And he's got a contract extension coming up. And if somebody like Aaron Rodgers isn't a part of those decisions, he doesn't even get a say in him, and he is – I mean, he's as valuable to his team as any player in the league, in the NFL. Like, Aaron Rodgers has dragged the Packers on his back for a few years now. And they haven't won anything, by the way. So, thoughts on that first. You think that's all real? It seems like it is. These are quotes.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the thing about it is I know Rodgers, I think, made some type of comment after, I think it was this, I don't know if it was this specific article, but kind of after these reports were swirling about him being frustrated, saying that it wasn't. But, I mean, if you look
Let me interject one more quote, sorry, sure, before you comment. Here's what he said to ESPN Radio. I thought that was an interesting change. He was referring to their Van Pelt not being retained. I thought that was an interesting change, really, without consulting me, Rodgers said. There's a close connection between quarterback and quarterback coach, and that was an interesting decision. I think it's pretty clear that players play and coaches coach and personnel people make their decisions, he told Milwaukee radio station 102.9 The Hog. That's the way they want it. By the way, fun fact, I saw Alex Van Pelt play in a bowl game against Boston College in the Diamond Walnut San Francisco Bowl at the end of the 2003 season, and Alex Van Pelt was the quarterback for Colorado State, and he threw three interceptions to the same player.
Oh, so not good.
Anyway,
for Mr. Van Pelt.
BC blew him out.
So those quotes, the one about Van Pelt and then the other one, I think that was relating to Jordy. I mean, there's really, it's not mincing words. He's clearly was bothered to not be involved in those conversations. The one thing that my initial reaction when reading this, and I turned to you to help me here, because I couldn't really remember, and I don't know if it's perhaps I'm too caught up in the NBA playoffs, but this almost, like, it feels as if it were kind of this LeBron thing where LeBron has always looked at it. He's like the GM, the player, the coach. He like runs the organization. And everyone feels like he was the one who traded for Larry Nance Jr. and Jordan Clarkson. In the NFL, I don't feel like there is, even, you know, despite whether it be Aaron Rodgers being as valuable probably to the Packers as LeBron is to the Cavs, or, you know, as dominant as Tom Brady is and all the things, I don't feel like it's a similar culture where this superstar player is kind of making all of these decisions. Am I wrong in that assumption? Because I don't feel like that is typically how it goes in the NFL.
Well, you can't compare it to the NBA because you're right. Like, LeBron is basically the GM of the Cavs and the coach and all that kind of stuff. So LeBron is a very unique instance. But even in basketball, we've seen scenarios like that. Kobe had to be consulted. Jordan would have to be consulted.
I mean, Damian Lillard pulled Paul Allen into a room and was like, what's going on here? Like, are we trying to win or not? You know, I mean, Damian Lillard is really good, but it just kind of, for perspective, he's like Stafford of the NFL. I don't think Stafford is going to pull the Lions GM into the room and be like, we winning or not?
Yeah, the richest owner in the NFL and the, you know, one of the richest owners in basketball. He might be the richest owner in basketball too, but, you know, he probably doesn't like being told what to do or questioned by his star player, but that's a relative culture of, you know, like Richard Sherman probably didn't have the opportunity to do that with the Seahawks, whereas Dame Lillard has the opportunity to do that with the Blazers. It's the same owner, Paul Allen. So I understand what you're saying. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers has a long history with Mike McCarthy. They went through a GM change there. Aaron Rodgers is looking for an extension. His current deal expires after the 2019 season, so you would think they'd get that deal done sooner than later, and certainly next offseason they're not going to want him being a lame duck QB, right? So I know, I do find it curious that they made those decisions without. I think he's got a fair point. I don't think that's an unreasonable gripe by him. And you know, the reason I found it interesting and it started a bigger thought process in my head is that, and I'm not suggesting the Packers haven't done this,
right?
But with all these QBs that we have coming in, these six QBs, the top six QBs we're talking about, and, you know, we can keep talking Kyle LaLetta and Mike White and Luke Falk and keep going down the list. But we focus so much, you're like, they should be a first rounder, they shouldn't be a first rounder, they should go to this team, or the Jets should have Mayfield, and he's a good fit for New York, and Brian Costello is going to write a million stories on him, and it's great. But we very often overlook the fact that these guys aren't always put into good scenarios. I think Andrew Luck is probably at the front of that conversation right now because he was graded out higher on Mel Kiper's board than anybody since John Elway. He started off great. Some people felt like he was given too much credit too early, and I understand that point, but I'm more on the pro-Luck side. I think he's super talented, but this injury has robbed him. And how did he get injured? The offensive line wasn't very good. He was taking a lot of contact. He was trying to do a lot on his own. Then he tried playing hurt, and those altered mechanics created a major shoulder injury. There's no other way to say it now. It is a major shoulder injury. He still has not thrown a football. This injury was a full year and a half ago. So in real time, missed the entire season, obviously, last year. So it has me thinking, like, we do all this hemming and hawing, and this guy's better than this guy, and this guy's better than this guy. Well, even if you right now have Sam Darnold graded over Josh Allen, what if Josh Allen ends up in a much better coaching scenario than does Sam Darnold? Like, so here's the irony. I don't have a lot of faith in Hugh Jackson, but think about the fact that Hugh Jackson could keep this job if Darnold comes in and plays well, like if they go 6-10. And people have no faith in Hugh Jackson. Joining us actually now is Tony Cincotta, and I want to see if you wanted to comment on this. I should interject that. Yeah, he is.
He's so, like, it's like when you if you say Hugh Jackson's name in a mirror three times, Tony appears and tells you how terrible he is at his job.
Yeah, it's like that Candyman horror movie. So, Tony, did you want to hammer Hugh Jackson or something else?
I was calling about Aaron Rodgers. The Aaron Rodgers thing is totally overblown, I believe, because the reason I say that is he actually just bought a stake in the Milwaukee Bucks. He's a basketball
fan. That.
Yeah. So I don't think he's going out of town. And second, the offensive coordinator thing was the whole story in and out is not the offensive coordinator, the quarterback coach.
The quarterback coach
played chicken. Yeah, he played chicken with them and lost. So basically, Green Bay has a rule. They're one of the only teams that doesn't allow you to go to another interview while you're under contract. So he purposely let his contract run out because he wanted to be an offensive coordinator. And then so his contract ran out. They knew what he wanted to do, and they said, all right, see ya. We don't want you back.
Well, so that's a good point. That adds color to the situation. And by the way, I was not suggesting that Rodgers is going to pack his bags at the end of the 2019 season. I think he'll be there. They'd be crazy to not come to an extension. I think they'll give it. But could it create hostility? Could it create hostility between him and McCarthy or him and the GM that even more moves get made in the front office and coaching staff?
Aaron likes to read about himself, so any way he can keep himself in the paper and talk in front of a microphone, he's going to take advantage of it. And plus, I think unlike Brady and some of these other guys, Aaron Rodgers wants to be the highest paid quarterback.
Well, one of the things, though, is in terms of Rodgers leaving, and this is kind of one of the problems with, I don't know if it's a problem, but no one can really leave in the NFL. Like, if Aaron Rodgers was like, I'm getting out of Green Bay, he'd have to wait till he's like, what, 38? So, I mean, it's one of those things where it doesn't even matter how mad he is. That was one of the things that did jump out to me from the article that you were talking about, Mike, is like, he can be frustrated all he wants. He has no leverage. And as much as we were talking about the Jimmy Garoppolo money and the Kirk Cousins money going to be a great thing for Aaron Rodgers and a great thing for Matt Ryan, yes, they're going to get paid big bucks. But you know what is really great about, you know, for some of those NBA guys is they have the flexibility to go wherever the hell they want. And in the NFL, that doesn't exist. And maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing, but I don't think that's one of the biggest differences between those two leagues. The NBA, very player-friendly. And the NFL is the complete opposite.
The NBA, a little different, though. You can go and you can leave, but you get less money because they have it built in that your own team can pay you way more. So you'd have to truly be in want to win to actually leave your team in the NBA.
Yeah, that's true. David West has done that for like the last
Kevin Durant did it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look. I'm not crying for Kevin Durant. He's got a $200 million shoe deal.
Well, that's why that ended up backfiring on. They're like, oh, we know they'll make you know whatever it is, 35 less million in contracts. It doesn't matter. There's still 100 millionaires on their deals, and the shoe contract money is 10 times bigger anyway. So it backfired.
Yeah, so,
and that's why Kevin Durant's on the Warriors and terrible.
So Tony, I know you're going to jump on a little bit later too, but I do think you're of the opinion that these quarterbacks aren't really all that great. They're going to get drafted in the first round.
No.
Like a bunch of them will be busts. But what's even more interesting is people are like, oh, well, I have Darnold ranked 1 and Allen 2 and Mayfield 3 and Rosen 4 and Lamar 5, whatever it is. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't know who their coaches are going to be necessarily, because a couple of these guys are going to join teams that suck, and then their coaches are going to be gone, and then it's new coaches, and before you know it, the guy's in a rotation of offensive coordinators or head coaches, and nobody's developing him, and if he just landed at a different team, he would have been a better player.
Here's the 100% honesty thing. Like, take the Aaron Rodgers thing. Aaron Rodgers, like, slips down in a day all the way down to 20, you know, down to the 20s, and then he ends up at Green Bay, a perfect scenario. And look, it sets
That's
his
right.
career apart. Every one of these teams that we're talking about have a quarterback has been a dysfunctional franchise for a long time. How the hell is that going to play out when we're even skeptical about these guys?
That's right. Think about the teams that are looking at the QBs. The Browns, the Jets, The Cardinals have had recent success and whatever, yeah. You know, that they're moving on to another.
But they had, an offensive coach who's longer there.
That's right. And the Bills just made the playoffs after a 17-year drought, which I think they're headed in the right direction.
Their coaching situation, though, from an offensive perspective, you can certainly question.
I agree.
I will say the volume, though, can work in their favor. If six quarterbacks go for the first time since 83, you're kind of playing the numbers game. So in 83, the six guys went, three Hall of Famers, another one that made the Pro Bowl, and then two that kind of flamed out. So if six go, then at least two
of
them are
going to be. Yeah, that's not good, Kev. That's not good.
Whoa.
That's not a good success rate.
If they produce, if they produce three Hall of Famers?
No, two Hall of Famers, and then you need Todd Blackledge and Ken O'Brien and Tony Eason.
Jim Kelly, Dan Marino, John Elway, three Hall of Famers.
Jim Kelly, my bad. Jim Kelly.
And there was another one that made a Pro Bowl.
It's still a 50% hit rate.
Time out. What year was that again? Can you repeat it?
83.
Yeah.
You're playing the percentages.
What year is today?
But if six quarterbacks go, we're playing percentages. I don't. What are we doing here?
But we've had quarterbacks, four quarterbacks go in drafts, right? And none of them ended up being any good since then.
The 99 draft was terrible. Donovan McNabb was the only one that worked out.
You're picking the greatest year. You're picking the greatest year ever. I have the list of the third quarterbacks taken in the first round, and only one of them's good. The only third quarterback taken is Ben Roethlisberger since the year 2000.
Yeah, and 04 was a great year, banner year. You got probably multiple Hall of Famers there. So I didn't mean to denigrate the 83 class. I'm just saying some of the guys from that class weren't any good. And Todd Blackledge was the guy with a lot of fanfare, too. And it just didn't work out for the Chiefs. But I think we all agree that that's sort of the greater point. I want people to understand, like, yeah, if you're a Browns fan, you're probably fired up that you're going to get Darnold, but you wanted to – everybody wanted Hugh Jackson fired. The fact that he has a job makes no sense to me, but now Hugh Jackson could be the coach for the long term, and I don't know that that's good for Darnold or anybody else.
Yeah. No, it's a crazy situation.
Well, it's one of those things, right? Like, and I think both of you feel like the Pats probably won't take quarterback. There's a lot of people think that they might take quarterback. But let's just say at 23, 30, let's say at 31, they take Mason Rudolph and Sam Darnold goes one, right? 30 picks in between the two. There's probably going to be a bunch of people coming out of the draft to go, I might feel a little bit better about where Mason Rudolph is going to be going forward, because then he'll be under Brady. He'll have Belichick, and the Patriots are obviously a well-oiled machine organization-wise to where you feel like they can at least put him in somewhat of a chance to succeed. On the other end of that, Sam Darnold's next to Hugh Jackson, and that's just not a terrific situation, especially in comparison. So I think that's to your point, where it's we can evaluate these guys all we want, but as soon as they get to a team, the evaluation does completely change at that point.
Yeah, it does. I'll tell you what, it's one of the craziest things when you think about it, is some of these guys that have been there. I mean, all these guys are first round picks, and you look at it, it definitely comes down to where it was. I mean, Cam Newton, right? Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford, Joe Flacco, all these guys have done well, and some of them weren't. Like Matt Stafford wasn't in a great situation, but I think he's just that good of a quarterback that he overcame that. I don't think any of these guys are him.
I think that's fair. And I'll be honest, I wasn't in love with Stafford when he first got picked. As much as any player I've watched in the last 10 years, I can say without a doubt that I was wrong about Matt Stafford, and he has noticeably improved as a player. He got himself in way better shape. He was hurt a bunch earlier in his career. So over time, Matt Stafford has become a really good quarterback. And I do think that Matt Patricia is in a spot now where he's going to have to build up the team around him, because I think they're kind of wasting a guy that's super talented. So, Tony, thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you again a little bit later. And we're going to talk NBA playoffs next. We're going to talk the Bucks and how they took care of the Celtics. And also a quick note about Chris Davis's contract, because Tony wanted me to compare that to Jason Hayward. We'll do that when we come back. It's Mike and Kev on FST. Back after this.